Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome once again to My Big Break, the podcast series from Motorsport that looks at the big moments in the career of major figures in racing and how they could have led to a different path. I'm your host, Chris Medland, and this week I'm joined by Kamui Kobayashi to talk about the tough decisions choosing between Toyota and Honda as a young driver and the need to learn English to keep his career going. Kamui also talks about doing crazy stuff against Jenson Button in Brazil to try and prove himself worthy of a Formula One seat and the shock of when Toyota pulled out a few months later. Kamui, it's great to have you with us to talk about the major moments in your career and how it led you to this point today, sitting here racing at Daytona right now as a sports car driver. But you had been successful in karts in Japan. That clearly got you noticed quickly. But as with many Japanese drivers, it tends to be support from a major manufacturer that then lets you progress in racing. How did you get noticed by Toyota? What led to you being picked up by Toyota?
So I think my career at the beginning is it didn't go well when I was like 9 years old, and only the initial part of my racing career with go kart is had quite success, and you know we have Yamaha supporting go kart, and I was kind of the driver of semi driver workers for the Yamaha when I was like 11 years old already. Mm-hmm. So just after 2 years. And then, to be honest, there's a connection between Yamaha with Toyota was quite close. That's why when I was 14 years old, when I just carried, you know, in a go-kart when I was young. So every year I was the competing in the championship in Japan. And of course, having the good result there. And there was a, you know, naturally coming from Yamaha between the Toyota deal, we go to the driver young driver selection because that time the Toyota just begin to join the Formula One. They want to develop the Japanese driver in the Formula One, and that's why I was one of the driver of that. And at the same time, in Japan, it's not allowed to racing under the 18, so it wasn't 16. So I think at that time, I think our age, I think level for the go-kart was quite high. So Japanese Federation made a special deal with the government. So we were allowed to race 16 from my time. Mm-hmm. So I was the second guy who got this special permission of the license in Japan. And then at that time, okay, I went to the Toyota selection and I got the offer. I had a contract for 10 years when I was 14 years old with Toyota.
10 years?
Yes. And then same time, Honda was interested in me and they offered me to go into the Honda SRSF school. It's a Honda scholarship, the school for free for both together in same time. And I say, well, I'm happy to drive in both, you know, the school, to be honest. And just Honda was pretty happy to go both, but Toyota is not allowed. So at the end of the day, I just decided to stay Toyota because it looks Toyota is bigger in the Formula One. And that's why I decided at that time like this.
Because at that stage, yeah, Honda were BAR, I guess. They were like a supplier, but yes, they weren't a team. But exactly. Toyota were a full constructor.
Yes.
So it looked like to you that was the more likely path to Formula One, I guess. Is that what you were thinking already at that age? You're thinking, what's my route to Formula One?
No, I think that's time it's too far away to Formula One. So I was not even considering to be in the Formula One. Just I was dreaming the Formula One. But, you know, to be honest, it's when you just finished the go-kart, you're beginning to the, you know, the open wheel championship junior formula, it's quite far away to the Formula One. So to be honest, I wasn't thought about that, but probably Toyota had more opportunity, and that's why I just went there.
And at which stage did it, because you said a 10-year contract, like what do they tell you at the age of 14? What do you have to do over those 10 years? Or do they only give you sort of, well, next year you do this, next year you do that? Do they map it out for you?
It's kind of like, I have a 10-year contract, but there's quite a lot of detail. I don't even look the contract because I was too young age. But something like, I think they can decide if the term the contract or not, depend on the result. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite normal, to be honest. So, yeah. I cannot decide myself to going out at that manufacturer, but they can decide if I continue or they terminate the contract. So I think contract itself, it's quite natural, because when you took the young driver, you invest young drivers, you prefer to have a secure the long contract. So at the end of the day, I think I don't really mind to have 10 years, because I need anyway success in the motorsports, and I was not really, still dreaming situation is not realistic at that time.
Mm. But did you feel like you were, I guess, destined for a career in motorsport if you had been in so much demand that Honda said that they would like to sign you as well and you could be part of both Honda and Toyota at one stage? You must have felt like you must be pretty good if both want you.
I think when I was going over, I was pretty good. I mean, I won all the championship. For sure, I think was nearly dominating all the championship. And even when I came to European Go-Kart Championship, I did only 3 races, but I had a pole position with the new go-kart brand. So I think Guy was quite surprised. So I think I knew what I can do at that time. But when I jump into the open wheel car, the story is a bit changed. I couldn't drive like go-kart, and I can't show the performance as go-kart. And then I think that's where I think my career has been changed a little bit, to start thinking how I drive fast racing car. To be honest, when I had a go-kart, I even didn't think anything, and just you jump in the car and you are quick. Mm. But once you driven the open wheel car, it's different, because the car weight is such different to compare to go-kart. So you cannot drive car as much as you feel what you want, because you have to be more realistic what you have in the weight of the car. Mm. And at that time, I think the way how I drive in the car is completely changed. Start to thinking to be fast instead of you just jumping in the car and you drive.
Did that happen early then for you? Because I was going to say,
already 16.
By then you had that kind of feeling for it.
My first race, okay, this is a different story, because I wasn't really quick, you know.
Yeah, you had to learn quickly,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
But then do you feel that put you at an advantage compared to other Japanese drivers, having that special dispensation?
No, I think my advantage was in the first my year, it was 16 years old, racing in Japan. And then 17 years old, straight away after I finished championship second against Kazuki. Mm-hmm. He was winning the championship. And obviously, I was leading championship until last races, but last race I brought up the engine, and I lost the championship. But anyway, you nearly won the championship, but I can drive the Formula 3, because the engine size was restriction by the age. Mm-hmm. So to below like 2-liter engine, I'm allowed to race, but over 2-liter, I'm not allowed when I was 17. So I had to decide something different, and to just, send me the European Toyota Young Driver School. Mm-hmm. And the selection there. And I did the best time there, and they took me. But at that stage, I don't speak any English at all. So they were, really keen to learn English. So I think after this selection, they offered me to the race in the Formula Uno after. But I need to learn the English as much as earlier. And that was my challenging part. And anyway, I think a year after I went, moved to Italy. And yeah, I just stayed there for, you know, once you've been there, you never come back.
I want to ask actually how strange that is to you when, because as an English speaker, and most people listening to this podcast will be English speakers as well, you don't think about it. You think if you're going racing, what you need to be good at is driving a racing car quickly. And that's what you were proving you could do. But then the next big challenge was you needed to be able to speak another language. Was it frustrating to be like, the only way I'm going to progress or the best chance of progressing is if I learn a new language?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are island country. So we don't have any other country around us. So I think in the life, if you speak Japanese, that's only the way good. If you speak proper Japanese, I think that's the how you get business properly.
Mm.
And at that time, it's Japanese people. It's very hard to learn English because I think the people are not common who speak English around there. I think this time, after that 20 years, for example, now, it's people are understanding that English is going to be important because it's more easy to access any other country. It's business become more the global.
Mm.
So I think time being changed, but 20 years ago, it's a bit far away from that. So we have no knowledge about that we speak English because at that time, I think there's a couple of Formula One driver, but everyone, I think, doesn't speak English. Everyone had a translator, the personal translator to come in Formula One. So I think history in Japan for the motorsports and going to the global race is a bit different.
Mm.
And that's why I think I was a little bit shocked. Instead of you driving, you have to learn English. This is the priority thing. So just, you know, I think where I grew up myself, it's quite far away from the other language. So that's why it was a pretty hard time. But at the end of the day, I think when I did race in the Formula 1 in the second year, I won the Italian championship and the European championship. And then we moved to the Formula 3.
That was 2005, wasn't it? You won those two championships. And
yeah, I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was. Well, that's what I've got written down, so I'm hoping it's right.
Yeah. But
how influential was that season, do you think, in that you came to Europe and showed everyone how quick you were?
Well, I think I think that was my highlight of the you know, my career, because at the end of the day, you're coming from middle of Norway. You won the European championship, Italian championship in this category. Because this category was quite high level at that time because, for example, Kimi was directly went to Formula 1 from this category. So he won the championship and he next year he signed with Zarbo.
Mm.
And I think even Felipe did the winning championship, this championship. He did, I think, Formula 3000 a little bit and he directly moved to I think he was Zarbo as well, right?
Yeah, he was a Ferrari young driver.
Yeah,
he raced for Zarbo,
exactly. And also, I think that time Scott Speed was there. I think he won the European Championship. I think a year after or 2 years later, I won this championship. So, you know, I think in terms of junior formula, I think people are quite attention this category.
Mm.
And which I won the championship with this one was, I think, it's very important for my career to have in life in the motorsports in Europe.
Mm. But then after that, mm-hmm. you had a bit of a tough spell because you were... you went through to GP2 Asia in 2008, 2009.
No. I went to Formula 3.
Yeah, but you won GP2 Asia in 2008, 2009.
Yes, yes.
But apart from that, you hadn't had a top three championship finish.
Yeah.
So, like, that spell, was it a learning curve? Was it... How hard was it for you, basically?
I think I would say it's become more politically racing after that.
Okay, yeah.
And Formula 3 and GP2, you know, because I had teammates. My first year teammates were the Vettel, the Guido here, the Leicester, you know, my teammate. And our second year was Grosjean, Hülkenberg, Tom, I think Dillman was in my teammate, the French team. And obviously I'm like Toyota junior driver, but there's always Mercedes junior driver. And we were using the Mercedes engine.
Mm.
At the end of the day, I think you are nearly there, but always missing a couple of stints. And, you know, if you miss a couple of stints, it's a bit tough moment, which is, you know, if you're getting pole position, it's quite easy to win. But if not, it's tough. Mm. And I think it doesn't matter. I think at the end of the day, I have tried my best. And then, you know, like when I went to the Macau, I think I had my first year already got pole position, win the first race. The second race, just we fucked up. But I think it was showed the performance. So I wasn't really scared about that. And when we went to the GP2, last time, I think GP2 Asia was the older chassis, mm-hmm. which is different model car. It's same category, but different. And when we went to European, so I won the Asian Championship, I won that actually there. And I thought it should be fine because I did most of the tests. It was the best lap time and everything. It's so far confident. And first race was GP2. You just start the engine in Barcelona. You just went out. Engine was brought up in outlap. And I had no practice session because that's time I think half an hour, 1 hour practice, and you directly going to qualify. Mm. And we changed the engine. And still, you know, we knew the Barcelona track, how it is. So I was pretty confident. But when you finish qualify, you are nearly 20. We don't know what happened, really. And I think championship went through for all the season like that. I had a huge win there. But obviously, the performance was not as I expected. Mm. But it's very strange because it's from GP Asia and European Championship. I think in terms of the driver, it's the same. Just different chassis and it makes completely different the result. Mm. And then, I think people knew that little politics around there. And, you know, I think that's why I think I was a little bit more struggling to have the good result there.
But were Toyota understanding of that, do you think? They were the ones that...
Not really.
No?
No, not really. I think people around me knew that, the Toyota people, but it's very hard to mention to the top, the top management guys in the Formula 1.
Mm.
So that's why I couldn't get the seat directly there.
Because you were third driver already, weren't you, before you won GP2 Asia?
Yes.
So I guess at that point they must have been excited. And then,
but not really, because always people say that if you don't win the championship, you will never have an opportunity in the Formula 1 in Toyota. So I did my best, and it was, it's a bit hard time anyway.
But then it all turned around, I guess, in Formula 1 terms. You'd had the tough GP2 year, 2009, but Timo Glock has his big crash at Suzuka.
Injury,
and you'd run on Friday, I think, in practice?
On Suzuka, yeah.
Yeah, but... they said that you weren't allowed to race because you didn't qualify or didn't drive on Saturday. Yep. Like, what do you remember of that event? Were you thinking suddenly, I know, sad circumstances that Timo had got injured, but were you suddenly thinking, I'm going to get to drive in Formula One at my home race?
Well, I think I was, I remember this was quite exciting myself, but didn't happening. And the people were saying, I think Timo is going to be fine for Brazil.
Mm.
So, I say, well, I think it's going to be some. It's my dream because Toyota was not keen to do the third year in the GP2. Mm. That's why maybe I will go back to Japan for some racing there, which was, I was like, well, I think this is life. It was not enough. So, end of the day, I got an opportunity in the Brazil, and I did some good races there. And we have another offer in Abu Dhabi, and I think I finished sixth.
Mm-hmm.
I think at one point I was fighting for podium directing in second races myself. So I was quite, happy about situation. Well, we got the problem in the last 2 years because GP2 was struggling a lot, especially European Championship. I knew that in my heart there was some politics around, but anyway, I think we need to fight with this. You need to show something what you can do. At the end of the day, it wasn't work well. And when I jump into Formula One, something I showed that I can do a bit better than what I expected. So I think that was, important time is my career, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, this podcast is looking for your big break. And I guess Timo's crash would be it.
Mm-hmm.
But when then it came to Brazil, because his injury hadn't healed enough for him to race in Brazil, when were you told you're going to be in the car, you're going to be making your F1 debut?
I think it was on Tuesday I was in Japan.
Oh, wow. That late.
And when I hear that, I just packed the bag and I had to fly there. So it was like, I don't know Brazil. I never been there. I never raced there. Like
no simulator then
nothing,
to practice.
You know, it's just to be honest, it's huge different than what I expected because I haven't driven the Formula One for nearly 7 months or something like that. And the first of all, what happened is just you jump in the car, you went, you know, some power track, you know. After three lap, it's just your neck is gone.
Really?
Yeah.
How quickly?
Yeah. I said, okay, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how did you get through the race then with it? Did it go actually quite late in the race? Because I remember you fighting Jensen early.
Yeah. But I think I finished 9.
Yeah. And was that because your neck started to go?
No. It was okay. I managed it. I was still young, you know. I can handle if you feel your neck is gone, but it was a tough time, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, so I remember of that race, there was a radio message from Jensen that was, I mean, he won the title, so I think it was kind of said positively afterwards, but he called you crazy.
Yeah, I know.
And do you actually think, in a weird way, that was a good thing for you, that in the race at the world champ, he became world champion, he was talking about you and how hard you were to beat, basically, to get ahead of. Do you think that was a good thing that you got to race him directly and put on a bit of a show?
You know, I can tell. That's my only first race. I have no sign for a year. So I don't need to be nice to even whatever the world champion or, you know, who leading championship because I have my life and I'm doing my job as much as I can. I know he will be fast, but, you know, for sure that he's pissed off because, you know, I'm doing big crazy stuff. I knew this crazy stuff, but anyway, this is racing. We try to not crash each other. And I have a bigger advantage because, you know, I have nothing to lose, but he have a lot of things to lose. So that's why I use this, you know, the mentality or the philosophy in the background that I just go aggressive. But at the end of the day, I think I was smiling because I enjoy, you know, he's a professional driver. He's not taking risk. He tried to manage. He tried to be fair. I was maybe not fair, but I think this is how it is in the race, especially like the my situation, because you don't know if you have next race or not. And then I think this is, you know, when you're considering, I think, you know, I think to myself, well, I think this is what I have to do is best. And for sure that he is shouting the radio, but I was definitely smiling in the helmet because he definitely went crazy. This is I knew when I was driving, you know.
Did you hear he was as well?
I don't know. I don't hear anything, but, you know.
You just, could tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like the body language of the car or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I think this is racist and we work in a professional way. So, you know, we have no really contact and we managed to race and he won the championship. So at the end of the day, I think this was a good show.
It was. I mean, I always remember it and it really put your name, I think, on the F1 map because like you say, because of the way GP2 had gone, people were like, how good really is he? And then they see you do that and they're like, wow, this guy's exciting. We want him in F1. And then, like you said, you had the great result in Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone assumed that's it. He's Toyota's future driver. He's going to be racing for Toyota next year.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Toyota pulled out.
Yeah.
When did you find
out? Just after that Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they called me and I had to go to Germany to the meeting. And I saw I'm going to have opportunity for the, you know, offer for the season.
Mm.
And I was like going smile, you know, happy boy, you know, young kids, get dreams, work in the company. And the guy was quite serious face somehow. And I didn't realize, you know. And I just got to tell me, okay, we will pull out Formula One. And I said, when? I thought I have one more year.
Yeah.
Because it was sudden, you know.
Mm.
And just that was the last race. Wow. So which means I lost a job. Yeah, you lost a job. And, well, I was like, well, I saw I got some dreams. But dreams was only maybe 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, wow.
At a happy time, you know. And I came back to, because that time I was living in Paris. Mm-hmm. So I drove back to the Paris from Germany. And just when they relax, I start packing my bag, you know, because no point to stay in Europe then.
Mm.
And And I think after weeks or something like that, I think Peter Zauber was tried to contact me, and I got this news, and we immediately went to Zauber. And when I went to Zauber, that day I saw it was an interview. Mm-hmm. But we signed directly there.
Oh, wow. He was ready to sign you straight away. And you'd not been told beforehand that this interest existed?
No, it just he wanted me drive to there. And he backed the Formula One because he was a little bit out and because BMW was taking over. Mm.
And then they left at the end of 2009 as well. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why he would try to find young drivers, whatever. And I say, well, I'm very happy to drive. And we signed that actually for nearly, I think, 2 year plus option for third year. Mm. So it was for me, I was quite impressed about how life could change, to be honest.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So for that, was there help from Toyota? Did they try and... Because were you still technically...
No, yeah, I have a contract, but Toyota is not helping at all.
So that was just... all off your own back sort of thing. Did you have a manager that helped or?
No.
So just, it was, so Peter Sauer was genuinely trying to contact you directly.
Yeah, I had the friend, you know, the Mario. It's an Italian-Japanese guy.
Okay.
Yeah, helped me because he was a kind of manager of the Alesi. Mm-hmm. And Alesi was used to drive in Zabo. So he had a contact and just we went there together and we signed.
Wow.
So actually Toyota was not doing anything.
So when you left Sauber that day, mm-hmm. having signed the contract to be racing in F1 again, mm-hmm. and you said you'd had the dreams you'd had going to Toyota the first time and then, we're leaving. Yeah. And then probably the opposite, I guess, going to Sauber and then leaving and you were an F1 driver again. Just how much of a second chance did it feel? How special did it feel to suddenly be like, wow, it's changed instantly?
Wasn't really like, you know, really something felt gonna change my life. Mm-hmm. I still make survive in Europe. This is what I had the impression because in Toyota has more opportunity because, you know, you can consider in the long future. Mm. But with Zauber, if you don't really success, just you will kick out quickly. So I had more pressure when I signed it. Mm. It's gonna be more challenging time because nobody can help. And just you have to believe yourself and you have to do your best. And that's what I saw last time. So I think, you know, I had opportunity, but it's not like kind of dream come true really at that time because, you know, when you are in Toyota, you had more support in the background, you know. But in Zauber, it's a small company there. And I knew that it's going to be the hard time in terms of the budget and everything. Mm. So for sure... was no easy decision for me, but this was the opportunity for myself.
Did they ask you to bring budget? Did you have to work?
No.
So they were just like, we want you, yep. You're that good. Because you stayed for all 3 years, didn't you, as well? You did 2+1.
Yep.
And there's some good highlights, but one, again, that sort of jumped out was back at Suzuka and that first podium. Mm-hmm. At the time, there was speculation about your future. Did you know at that stage?
Yep.
You already knew that you were going to be leaving?
Yep.
So what did it feel like to... finally get that, because that was your first podium.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
how special did that feel? Home race, first podium, knowing that it's probably your last chance as well.
You know, I think I had a quite good chance in that year. You know, I started to spar in the second row. I had other races. I was fighting for podium many times. but it's always something bad, but like missing luck. It's not performance.
Well, yeah, Spa, I mean, was nothing to do with you at all, and, I mean, and a car comes flying over your rear wing.
Exactly. Many times when you are, you know, had a big opportunity, you had something wrong, and that's life. And I thought, I think that time the car, I think always could be in like Suzuka or Spa, in a way you have a high-speed truck. And I thought maybe Suzuka was the one of the last opportunity to have to bring the performance there. And I think suddenly we went pretty well. And that's why I got podium. So in the end of the day, I felt like, well, I was not completely missing luck. I had some luck in the end of the day because I think Checo got maybe two or three podium last year. But when you're considering, you know, like in terms of performance, well, it's not far.
Mm.
It's not something I'm like clearly I was losing. It's just, you know, very, we are close, but somehow I was missing the luck at the end of the day. So at the end of the day, when you want to have a, you know, success in the Formula, you need the luck as well. And I think that in my career, what lacking on the part, it's luck. It's not something you're doing long.
Mm.
But when you're missing the luck, it's having quite such different result in end of your career.
Mm.
So that's why I said, well, finally I got it and I had luck. I felt like my shoulder became a little bit lighter.
Mm.
I think that's what I felt.
You then had to do a year out though, didn't you? 2013 from Formula One.
No. I went to the Ferrari, the GT.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so you didn't race in F1 in 2013. Yeah. But you were looking for F1 opportunities and then came back to Caterham. Yes. Was that a tough decision to make? Because Ferrari's a big, big program to be part of.
Yeah, big program, but, you know, they are not sure if they gave me opportunity because they had, I think, a little long contract with the current driver.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're out of Formula One for 2 years, and if you get opportunity in third year, probably maybe it's the best option, but you don't know. On the other hand, you have I got offer from the Caterham anyway, and if you get offer on the Caterham and if you make a little bit good result there, probably you have a different option for the, you know, going to other manufacturer, whatever, you know, other teams.
Mm.
And that's why I had to decide. Either you get no chance in the Formula One, or you get a brilliant future in Ferrari, or you try to go Caterham yourself. You try to open the door to see. I say, well, I prefer to jump in the kind of Formula One to see if I can able to do. Because in the way you are in Ferrari, you have to wait.
Mm.
You can't do anything, right? So that's why I say I prefer to try to open my door myself. And that was decided by myself in the going to the Caterham in the end.
I mean, you put in some really good performances in that car, but it didn't, in the end, open those doors. So exactly. When you look back on it now, does it look like a good or a bad move?
The end of the day, wasn't a bad move anyway, because I think if I stay in Ferrari, still I didn't get an opportunity, I think, because that time, I think Dominic Carri and Montemozero was there, and they had to move as well after a few years.
Mm.
So even the Ferrari was quite big move around.
Well, yeah, Fernando left at the end of 14 and Sebastian came in and it was a big overhaul.
Exactly. So if I stay there, I'm pretty sure I didn't get anything.
Mm.
So I think this team was right.
And then eventually off the back of that though, you ended up returning to Toyota with WEC.
Yep.
In 16.
Yep.
When that call came, like how close had the links been? While you'd been chasing that F1 dream and, you know, going to Ferrari, going to other big manufacturers, was there no contact with Toyota at all, or were they still kind of part of your career?
Toyota, you mean?
Yeah.
We have no contract, to be honest. We have no contract, nothing really. But we know the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the WEC Championship in 2013 with Ferrari. So we know the guys. And just still, they didn't give me the seat directly, so we had to go to, you know, the driver shootout, and I drove there.
They love a driver shootout, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, we have it.
They do it for, do they do it for basically every category they have?
Yes.
Wow.
We have Jean-Luc Bion, There's everyone there, to be honest.
Mm.
And I did my best time there. And they say, well, I think you get seat probably. And still, I didn't get it directly, so I had to wait 2015.
Mm.
Because I did a Formula One, and with Ketan was like 2014. And I joined the World Championship in 2016.
Mm.
So I have a 1 year break as a reserve driver in the WEC. So, and then the 2016 back to the WEC. And this is where I started endurance championship properly in my career.
But was it special to be back with Toyota? Or was it a little bit like you were walking away from your F1
dream? Really. Not really. Just, you know, we had a long contract when I was young, but you know, we finished the work, and you know, when I come back to Toyota, you know, with the endurance championship, obviously, it's kind of not anymore young drivers.
Mm.
You had the experience, and you had to show the result. So, in the end of the day, it's just as a manufacturer, I'm working,
mm.
and yeah, in the end of the day, I think I felt it's a bit different.
But you've definitely given them the results. I mean, you've finally became a Le Mans winner last year.
Yeah.
You back-to-back WEC championships as well. Like, yeah. You're a world champion. Like, how good a move was it for your career to move into the top level of endurance racing? Because it, for some drivers, it is tough to really think of life after Formula One.
Yeah. You know, I think when you're considering my driving style, probably people say my driving style is not for endurance.
Mm.
Many people say, and I was thinking same as well.
Were you? You admitted that.
Yeah, to be honest, yeah.
Too aggressive.
But, yeah, I saw that. And anyway, I need to adjust because it's part of job. And, you know, I think I had a couple of mistakes in the beginning, but I think quickly I recovered myself, what I had to do in the endurance races. And in the end, I started to show the speed, the consistency. And, yeah, we have a little bad luck in Le Mans. But anyway, I think... we don't give up, and finally we made it last year. But most of the race in Le Mans, we were reading half of the race at least up until something happening. So clearly, I think I adjust pretty well in the endurance races. And then, you know, now I'm like 35 years old. Still, I felt like, well, I think I didn't lose performance. I just, you know, keep in performance and then more get consistency.
I was going to mention your age, actually, because it's quite easy to remember drivers that raced in Formula One a little while ago and think, well, they're a lot older now. But like you say, you're only 35 and you've achieved so much in your career so far already. What's next for you? We're normally looking for the big break in terms of what led you here, but yeah. I still feel like you have so much ahead that there must be more on your plate.
Well, I think I have many things I want to do, to be honest. But now I have a... still driving, but I have a new role that I will be the team principal. I am team principal of the WEC. So I have more jobs in Toyota now. However, I think still, you know, as a driver, I prefer to be, it's more, you know, it's not only the endurance. I want to try like a little bit more the NASCAR stuff because nobody been, you know, driving so many category, because I think most of the category I've done, I did GT3 championship, GT3 races, I did GT WEC, I did endurance with the LMP1, now the Hypercar, I'm doing the racing in the Super Formula, of course Formula 1, all the category in Europe. I drove a DTM car as well in Japan, you know, we did the races. So I think I'm driving really a lot of car.
Yeah, a lot of experience in that. Yeah,
exactly.
Time.
So what are you missing? It's I think more the United States race, to be honest.
So like IndyCar as well, or would you prefer NASCAR, do you think?
Yeah, I think IndyCar is pretty good, but if someone say last choice what we want to do, it's more than NASCAR, because IndyCar is somehow is more similar to, you know, the Super Formula, because chassis made by Dallara. I think the way drive is not a huge difference, I guess. And when I'm considering like Paro, he was Super Formula. And even the old world as well, he was in the Super Formula. So I think if I go there, I know what I can do. So, which is not really super shiny myself. But if you go NASCAR, it's going to be big shine there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And is that, well, I mean, we're sat here now recording this in Daytona at the Rolex 24. Is that one of the reasons you keep coming back here? Are you trying to talk to NASCAR teams?
Not really. I enjoy here, especially this DPI category. It's going to be, this is the last race of DPI. I love racing here, and I enjoy all the time here. You know, to keep, you know, passion the motorsports, I think Daytona is one to really change, give me my times and the feeling of the motorsports. Because when you're racing in Europe, there's a lot of pressure around, a lot of stress around, because you have, it's everything is by the result. But here, it's you fighting in the family team. You know, you have a smile, you joke around. When you have the job, you have the job. It's kind of like, I love here, to be honest. I mean, this kind of this atmosphere, momentum, you know, the people, how they focus on the racing, how off. It's shock when you finish the practice and how quickly the mechanics live in the truck. It's impressive. You can see it in Europe.
No, everyone's there for hours.
Yes.
Yeah. I went to an IndyCar test at Barber with Nico Hülkenberg, and I was still working, and the truck drove past me and left. I was like, I've only been here 45 minutes.
Exactly.
It was amazing.
You can breathe.
Yeah. But for you to be here then now at this stage of your career, if you think back to when you signed that 10-year Toyota deal, and you're looking at, I guess, becoming a professional racing driver, could you imagine you'd have done everything you've done and that you'd be here at this stage?
No. Honestly, no. But, you know, now I'm very, you know, too close to the Mr. Toyota Akio, which is the boss of the Toyota company. And we have the big conversation between me and him, you know, like when he pulled out Formula One, for example, it's Toyota, it was his decision. It's, you know, what's his name, that Invest company? Was back in the Formula One time, it was 2009. There's something happening, you know.
The financial crisis.
Yes. So when that happening, it's a lot of pressure around in the company, and that's why he had to pull out. Mm. And the Formula One is one of the, you know, it's expensive, the budget at that time. So that's why he said. And after when, you know, come back to Toyota, and when we came back, we had some appearance in Japan, and he just passed me. He arrived in Tokyo airport, and we did the appearance in Tokyo Center. And it was close to his house, so he just passed me. He wanted to just say hello, you know, to me after, you know, 7 years or something like that. And the first thing what he said was he apologized for that, you know, thing. Pull out Formula One. He couldn't say anything at that time, but you know, after 7 years, he felt sorry to not team the company, but to the driver. So I felt like, well, he had a respect to the driver at least. And then we start to keep in touch. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, I'm officially Toyota driver, but I'm driving many other company, you know, as a category car. Even, you know, when I did a DTM races with Super GT, I'm Toyota driver, but I drove BMW car.
Yeah.
Not Toyota car. And it's all allowed by him, you know. He said, yeah, it's fine. And even coming here at Cadillac, he's very supportive what I'm doing, because at the end of the day, I think when Japanese people success in the global races, this is good news for Japan. It's truth. And that's why I want to come back. I want to racing the different country races. So I have a lot of respect to him, and we had a lot of conversation. At the end of the day, I think I'm like doing the young driver development, the many project running in the future project. You know, we bring the hydrogen car in Japan for the motorsports. And I think that was a starting between myself and the boss conversation. I want to race with this car. And after half a year, he made it. And this is where we begin the hydrogen races there. So at the end of the day, I think we want to have more the future. We are thinking the future, what can be in not only motorsports, what can be, you know, the normal road car, even what we have to be. And at the end of the day, you know, we were talking, we want to have motorsports be consistent and sustainable. And we are talking about how. And at the end of the day, I think if motorsports, okay, if all road car goes to the electric, for example, what can be in the motorsports? It's going to be very tough because we can't use fuel. So if you go into the electric car, yes, I think as a race is fine, but we can't get any, you know, emotional races, because the sound is one of the important parts for the motorsport. Without sound, I think it's a bit sad. And probably in the beginning of a few years, it should be fine, but when you're considering 10 or 20 years, we would lose clearly fans. And I don't want to be like this race. That's why we start to, you know, talk about something different, and hydrogen was one of the key. And this is where we begin to, you know, involve more project in starting Toyota.
So your role's becoming bigger and bigger within the company?
Yeah, it's clear.
Is that, do you see that as your future? Is that almost like management within Toyota?
Yeah, I'm not like, you know, I would say it's a role is bigger.
Mm.
But to be honest, I'm not clearly I can see the view of the future, because there's so many things going on in the motorsport. But at least I want to be more, you know, dream sports. As a motorsport, it has to be a dream.
Mm.
And we have to motorsports bring as entertaining, and people have to get really excitement when alive in the truck, watching the car, racing car, and have to feel unusual life. That's why people want to pay to watch.
Mm.
I think to do that, I think this makes more sustainable in the motorsports in the end. And also, I think that we can bring more the car fun. You know, I think the car need to be fun. If it is, when you know, success a job, what do you buy? Watch the car, right? When you are poor, still, if you live in the United States, you need a car for work.
Yeah.
But once you bought a car, probably it's the edge of your budget. So you clean the car. You try to keep car as much as, you know, like brand new.
Mm.
It's like dog. It's family, the part of family.
Yeah.
I think this is very important for me to consider. That's why I think we want to keep to be the car is for fun. It's something to keep it exciting. And it's the same in motorsports. So try to give more the connection, the logical and the motorsports in the end. Because we need this, these things to us survive, you know, in this life.
Mm. And dare I say it then, I mean, we were looking for like a big break in your career and found a few from your racing career, but actually rejoining Toyota to be part of that company again could prove to be one of the biggest breaks because of what it might lead you to do in the future.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, still, I don't know what it's going to be in the future, but, you know, try to help this company, as motorsports as well, what I think. And now I have more the power to something change, because now I start working into the company. It's not the contract. I'm working the Toyota now. So I'm working the management side, and I can handle things. And, yeah. I think something that I would say, the Toyota is one of the family company.
Mm.
It's not like there's investor or whatever. There's nothing. So it's a family company. So if family give direction, we can change direction.
Mm.
I think this is the biggest thing since compared to other manufacturer.
Wow, it's gonna be really, really exciting to watch take that on top of the racing stuff.
Yeah.
But I get the feeling you won't stop racing anytime soon.
No, I think, you know, I feel I enjoy the race. Still, I want to continue the race because I don't think I lose the performance. I still, you know, to keep performance, keep consistency. No reason to stop, to be honest. And up until I develop like good young Japanese driver, to be honest, I don't want to stop because I want to give, I want to share the, my experience to young drivers properly, and I want to waiting for next generation to success in like this championship, for example. The new Japanese coming here to success, I think this would be great. So I tried my best. I've been part of the development things. So we'll see how it goes in the future.
Well, we look forward to seeing how it goes. Yep. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.